And what they see in their research and writing process is what it shouldn't be. And so there's obviously going to be frustration around, why do I have to do this? Because I don't have to do this in any other aspect of my life. Something else is taking that place so that I can focus on learning. Isn't that what I'm here for? And so obviously they're going to have a negative association with research and writing, because they have all these negative little steps that are purely mechanical in nature, in which the rest of technology is eliminated from the rest of their lives, so they can focus on more fruitful things and more things that they like that are more creative.
The Digital to Learn podcast is dedicated to exploring both what's new and what's good in the use of technology in teaching and learning.
Our mission is to have the best minds sitting in front of our microphones, sharing evidence-based strategies for digital teaching and learning.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Thank you for joining us. And now, the Digital to Learn podcast.
Welcome to the Digital to Learn podcast. I'm Tiffany Snyder, and I'm here with my co-host, Brad Gardner. Hi, Brad.
Hi, Tiffany.
We are welcoming to the show today Wilson Sue of PowerNotes. Welcome to the Digital to Learn podcast. I'm Tiffany Snyder, and I'm here with my co-host, Brad Gardner. Hi, Brad.
Hello.
This is part two of a two-part series. So if you didn't catch part one with Wilson Sue, please do so. You can listen to Digital to Learn on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pandora, or Podbean. Welcome to the show today, Wilson.
Thank you, Tiffany. Glad to be back with you and Brad.
Thanks. Our audience is primarily higher ed faculty representing different disciplines. Mm-hmm. So when you talk about your work with PowerNotes, what is it that they could expect from PowerNotes? Is it an add-on feature, a browser extension? How do you classify it? And what would your message be for that faculty audience?
You described some components of it. So certainly there's part of it that's an extension, that there's an add-on that can enhance some of the things you're trying to do. But when I think about it and the way I kind of designed it, it's kind of an ecosystem that's supposed to, and by the way, I was a process engineer when I was an engineer. So that's supposed to give you a nice continuous process or workflow for what you're trying to do. And what you're trying to do typically starts in the context, and we started in the context of research and writing, because that was a particular problem that I had to go through when I was in law school, and particularly with digital sources. So, you know, the whole process of digesting your digital sources online, so you're looking at it on your browser, and then taking it to a point where you need to write and you can actually start writing and drafting and turning it into arguments and all that sort of stuff. That's just a huge gap in my mind, in my experience of like, what do I do in between the beginning and the end? And a lot of us are kind of like left to figure it out on our own as students. All PowerNotes is a process or a workflow that's designed to work with the beginning, because we know what the beginning is, and what the likely end is, and kind of take you through the entire middle in as seamless and efficient a manner as possible without kind of losing any of the pedagogical benefits that teachers are trying to get across. And so, you know, because it's a browser, that's where you're getting stuff. That's why we chose an extension. You know, that's just the easiest way to do it. And then all of the little things in between flow from that, because I mean, students will come up with their own process. I came up with my own process when I was in law school. And that process was horrible because I didn't have the tools that, no tools were actually designed for that process until PowerNotes, in my opinion. And so using the things that I had at my disposal and kind of stitching them together just made the whole thing really painful, which I think is important for students. And again, I'm focusing on students because like that's who we initially catered to, and it kind of colors the whole thing in a negative light for them, because I mean, if you just ask students what they think of like research and writing, what do you think the answer is going to be? It's generally negative. But then because we actually do these surveys, we actually broke it down. Okay, there's like 10 mini processes in research and writing, right? There's the actual like reading and learning part, there's the actual writing part, there's reorganization, there's organization, there's citation, there's a whole, we broke it up into like 10 parts.
I imagine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, editing. And so they actually don't like very specific parts. They love certain parts. They actually really like the learning part and the reading part. They actually really like the drafting and editing. Yeah, they have a hard time getting to that first draft because that first draft is a challenge. But the things they really dislike are the things that are purely mechanical. I mean, think about it. Like, I'm not going to like pick on millennials or anything like this because like people like to pick on them, but like they understand what technology should be, right? Because they've lived through it. And what they see in their research and writing process is what it shouldn't be. And so there's obviously going to be frustration around why do I have to do this? Because I don't have to do this in any other aspect of my life. Mm-hmm. Something else is taking that place so that I can focus on learning. Isn't that what I'm here for? And so obviously they're going to have a negative association with research and writing because they have all these negative little steps that are purely mechanical in nature, in which the rest of technology is eliminated from the rest of their lives. So they can focus on more fruitful things and more things that they like that are more creative. And a lot of PowerNotes is just designed to like eliminate the mechanical so they can focus more on the educational. I honestly, I don't even remember what the question was, but that's my answer.
Great response. It was.
So what do you predict for the future? What kind of things do you think will happen that might make education, make citizens more amenable to new technology?
That's a lot. And it also depends on how you define future. There could be like the future's like a year from now.
Yeah.
Or the future can be like 10 years from now. And they're pretty different. I think the pandemic made a big impact for better or for worse. One of the biggest challenges that we had with talking to schools and higher ed and grad and whatever it is, you know, administrators are actually fairly forward-thinking in my mind. And that's probably why they became administrators versus actual people in the classroom anymore. And so they get the technology. When we present to the administrators, they're like, they're on board. They love what we're doing. But when it gets down to implementing it in the classroom and we're at the professor level, that's when things change. Now, pre-pandemic, there was always that kind of, why do I need this? I've been doing this for how many years? It's been working for me. They don't talk about whether it's working for the students and what's changed for the students, but it works for them and that's fine. They can have that. But so you know, there was always that kind of like barrier to adopting new things and technology. Like, why do I need technology in the classroom? Post-pandemic, it's different. I don't think anyone can answer that in the negative with a straight face anymore. So people just get it. Now, the problem with the pandemic is that they're too busy trying to get it. And so they can't even like think about other things. And that's fine. I understand that. But my guess is in the future, they're going to be much more receptive to technology in the classroom, much more receptive to the plight of students. Because, I mean, I don't know if you talk to students during the pandemic and what they have to deal with and how they're forced to learn today during the pandemic. And I see it with my kids when they went on lockdown in their like grade schools, which is just a really bad experience. If it's just you on a Zoom doing the same exact thing that you're doing in the classroom, but over Zoom, it's not a good experience. It's just not. It's not the same. In the class is way better, obviously, but there are definitely things that you can do besides just putting yourself on a screen over the internet to the students that can improve that process, make them feel more involved, connected, bringing kind of the social aspects of learning, which are very important. And most people aren't doing that. I think a lot of people, because they weren't prepared. Like when we talk to schools that have a huge online component, they're much more prepared. Like I'm not going to name names, but you know who they are. But if they have a big online component, they just kind of roll that online component out to all of their faculty. Yeah, it's going to be a challenge for the faculty that don't typically teach in those online environments to understand and use all those components because they might not, but they're going to have the resources there. And the faculty that can adapt the best are the ones going to have better experience. When you talk about post-pandemic, let's see whether or not those faculty kind of keep that attitude. I mean, I worry that they're just going to roll back into their comfort zone because they were uncomfortable during the pandemic. and kind of go back to the way things were, I don't think that's going to happen. At least they can't have the same objections anymore. But whether or not they're going to adopt something new, I don't know. But what I would say is, like, going to like a little further out, like 10 years, yeah, I think things will change. Mm-hmm. Just from sheer like attrition and renewal of, you know, who's coming in as new faculty. I wish it wasn't that slow and you had to rely on like retirement. Like that's sad. But I think things are changing. And just generally, like my mom has her iPad and her mobile device and she sort of knows how to use all of it. And so, you know, they're adapting slowly. Everyone's adapting. I mean, the kids are, my daughter knew how to use her iPad at like 3 years old. So she's not going to have an issue. And the whole world's kind of changing. People are changing at different paces. And some people don't even have access to technology. So they're going to change at a different pace. And so I think it's, you know, part of the problems at tech companies too. I mean, I don't want to, you know, say bad anything about anyone, but mm-hmm. I see a lot of bad product out there. I feel like some of the products out there are just poorly designed, hard to use. It's no wonder that faculty look at some of these products and then just assume that technology is hard to use because some of it is hard to use.
Yeah.
And that's not the point of technology. It's supposed to make it easier to use. And so there's a lot of companies that built their products, especially ed tech companies, because they seem to like kind of rest on their laurels once they have something built and not continue to innovate and improve their products so that it becomes more usable, more intuitive, and then roll that into constant improvement. And you could probably think of some examples right off the top of your head. It's incumbent on ed tech companies to make sure that they're improving, they're understanding their audience, they're understanding their users better so that they can build a better product. And also like not stepping on the toes of your users. Like I see a lot of ed tech companies that don't put the needs of the professors and the instructors into their product. And they're just trying to kind of usurp their role. And that's, I mean, I'm a tech person, but I don't think tech is a solution to education. I just don't. I think it's a piece of it. And there are certain parts of it that are more conducive to being kind of supported with technology and some pieces that just aren't. And I feel like a lot of really innovative, and I'm using air quotes here, you can't see me probably, really innovative companies that are using all these crazy like AI things and whatever to take over the teacher's mm-hmm. role. And I just don't see that being effective, at least in the short term. I mean, I worked at IBM for a long time and I saw at the time kind of like the forefront of technology and like a lot of AI was born in IBM. And I keep up with it today and it's just not anywhere it needs to be able to do stuff like that. Yeah. It's just not there. And yeah, you can see some big advances, but like, and you can see the news articles, right? Like the AI right now is like, it's racist. It's inappropriate. And it's because it's not ready yet for certain applications. Is it great for like letting you know that you need to call someone because they're having an issue? Yeah. But is it great for answering their issue? No, it's not. And so I'm not saying don't work on it, but I'm saying like for primetime education, like be careful because a lot of it's not ready. But I mean, think about what you can do. Think about what the market's ready for and build something that you can feel good about. I mean, that's my kind of mantra. Like we have a bunch of professors we work closely with. Like if they don't want it, we're not putting it in. If we put it in front of students and they're annoyed, we're not putting it in. And so we have a pretty rigorous way we build our product in that there's a big area where you can improve, where you're not stepping on the toes of professors, where you're not annoying students. And so that's where we try to navigate. And we don't always succeed, but we always try to fix it if we're not succeeding. But I feel like too many ed tech companies and entrepreneurs are just doing what they want to do and not understanding the potential negative consequences of what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. And I think what you've described provides a great opportunity. If you think about that person who's teaching contract law,
yep.
who loves that subject matter, just in love with what they teach. And they meet with their students twice a week in class. And let's say they're really good at it and they communicate well and they share that passion with their students. But what they'd really like is for their students to be thinking about contract law more than Tuesday and Thursday nights, but throughout the week and all the time. So if you can convince them that, hey, you know, you can do that because you can put this content on your learning management system. You can teach them how to use Power Notes. So they're thinking about contract law 7 days a week. And isn't that what you really want?
Yeah, I think, I mean, yes. And it behooves the student to do that anyway, because they can't be thinking about anything right before they need to think about it. Law, the education of law is just so much content and so dense and so non-intuitive that you need to spread it out. You need to spread it out. You need a good way to organize and save the information you need to study with. And you need to be pretty disciplined about your study habits, and all of that is difficult.
Yeah.
Being a law student is difficult. Being a law student in the pandemic is difficult. And so the part that kind of annoys me the most is when you get a law professor that says, well, it's supposed to be difficult, which, I mean, I get that. Yeah. But and they're like almost as if they want the students to suffer like they did when they went to law school like 30 years ago in a completely different environment with completely different support structures and completely different access to things, and expect them to come out the same way. And I just don't think that's realistic.
Are they kind of thrown into the deep end and and not really taught how to approach the subject matter? It's just like, those who survived, good for you. The rest of you, I'm sorry, you don't belong here anyway.
Oh, that's exactly the mentality. So luckily I didn't have very many professors that did this, but there are professors that'll play like hide the ball in terms of like, instead of teaching you certain things, and I get this to an extent, but they will obfuscate things intentionally to try to get you to come to it on your own, which is great if everyone can eventually get there.
Yeah.
But if they can't, then are they deemed to be not worthy of that profession? I don't think so.
No.
Yeah.
Especially when you have way too many corporate lawyers and not enough people practicing law for like rural communities, communities in need. And so, yeah, you might not get that person that's just going to get it to do that kind of work, but you need people to do that work. Mm-hmm. So I think you need to open up some of that curtain to let more people in to do that work, because people need it.
Absolutely.
It's a great point. A final question for you. Again, for our faculty listeners, we have some who are ready to be involved in these forward-thinking decisions about technology and innovation. But as you mentioned earlier, oftentimes the ed tech questions go to administrators first, or even where Brad and I work in a Center for Learning and Innovation. So what advice do you have for the faculty member who wants to be involved in user design and giving feedback to ed tech companies and piloting ed tech products? And how do they get their name in the hat and have a say in the future of ed tech?
I would give that answer differently outside of the pandemic. Honestly, the pandemic's changed a lot. So, you know, if you find yourself just too busy to think of anything during the pandemic, like, I get it. But we're going to emerge from this. Like, whether it's the fall or whatever, like, at some point, things will get pretty close to normal. And you're going to have whatever time you had to do the little extra things that you could do before the pandemic. Hopefully, you get there. And to me, I think there's a lot you can do as an individual. Like something that we don't have like a high school, like a K-12 rollout program. We don't have a sales department or anything like that for K-12, but we have a good number of K-12 teachers that use Power Notes. And it's because either we meet them and we say, here, use this, or they just find us somehow. They'll sign up their class and we'll be like, who are these people that are signing up? Mm-hmm. And then we'll try to find the teacher and we'll reach out to them and give them free access. And so we want to work with professors, because at the end of the day, like, if this thing is getting used, and I've never been a professor. So like, I don't know how you might want to use it in the classroom. I have like some ideas, some that are wrong and some that are right. And so like 50-50 chance is not very good. So I'd rather take your word for it and understand and try to, you know, have you sit down and tell me how you want to use it and have me adapt PowerNotes for your use, which is what we do all the time, or tell you how other people are using it in a similar way so that you don't have to do all the work yourself. But the whole point is just reach out to us. Like, we can do a one professor thing. Like, we sell PowerNotes. We just started selling PowerNotes to individual classrooms in high school. And that's great. I have no problem with that. Like, I enjoy doing that because more people are exposed to it. We're learning how it's used in that area, and we can kind of spread the word that way. Same thing in higher ed. We're happy to work with just professors. Obviously, we don't have time to reach out to every professor. Like, we got like four salespeople, so we can't reach out to every professor. But that's not saying that we're willing to work with every professor, because we are. And so let us know that your class wants to use it. We'll get you set up. We'll even show you how to use it. We'll even get into your syllabus and tell you how to integrate it so you don't have to do all the work, because we know how other schools and other professors have integrated it. And my guess is that you're doing the same sorts of assignments as someone else that's using PowerNotes. And so we've done that legwork already, so you don't have to reinvent the wheel. So yeah, any individual can jump on board. If you like it, great. Introduce us to your administrator. Introduce us to your other professors. You don't have to do demos for them. We'll do that. We're happy to do that. We just don't have the resources to reach out to every single professor. So we go after administrators because there's just less of them.
Right.
Well, thank you, Wilson, for joining us. We were excited, as we mentioned, to have this law perspective. It's one we haven't had before, the law and ed tech, and even the COVID perspective, entrepreneurism in the midst of COVID and post-COVID, we hope. So thank you so much for joining us. And to our listening audience, we are going to have information about Wilson and the PowerNotes team and more on our website, www.digitaltolearn.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at @digitaltolearn with a numerical 2. Please like this podcast, download the episodes, and come back for more. We'll be back next week.
Thank you for joining us on Digital to Learn.
If you enjoyed this podcast, there are 3 things we ask you to do. 1, come back and join us again. 2, tell your friends about us. And 3, give us a positive ranking on your favorite podcast platform.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
It's a digital world.
Always keep learning.